Politically Georgia Podcast is your essential news source, providing in-depth analysis and reporting from Peachtree Street to Pennsylvania Avenue. Listen to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's trusted veteran political voices, now streaming 5 days a week. Hosted by Greg Bluestein, Bill Nigut, Tia Mitchell, and Patricia Murphy. Tune in weekdays at 10 a.m. on WABE 90.1. Stream at ajc.com/podcasts. News and analysis 5 days a week from Politically Georgia Podcast.
I know it's been a little while since our last podcast, but when I got the chance this week to talk to Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn, I knew we had to get another episode out. I do want to warn you about strong language. A little more than 6 months after January 6th, Officer Harry Dunn was among four officers to testify before the Congressional Committee now investigating the Capitol riot. And for some people watching, it was their first time hearing about the racism he says he and other black officers experienced that day. This is what Dunn said during the hearing on July 27th.
More insurrectionists were pouring into the area by the Speaker's lobby near the rotunda, and some wearing MAGA hats and shirts that said Trump 2020. I told them to just leave the Capitol, and in response, they yelled, "No, man, this is our house. President Trump invited us here. We're here to stop the steal. Joe Biden is not the president. Nobody voted for Joe Biden. I'm a law enforcement officer, and I do my best to keep politics out of my job. But in this circumstance, I responded, well, I voted for Joe Biden. Does my vote not count? Am I nobody? That prompted a torrent of racial epithets. One woman in a pink MAGA shirt yelled, you hear that, guys? This nigger voted for Joe Biden. Then the crowd, perhaps around 20 people, joined in screaming, boo, fucking nigger. No one had ever, ever called me a nigger while wearing the uniform of a Capitol Police officer. In the days following the attempted insurrection, other black officers shared with me their own stories of racial abuse on January 6th. One officer told me he had never, and in his entire 40 years of life, been called a nigger to his face, and that streak ended on January 6th. Yet another black officer later told me he had been confronted by insurrectionists in the Capitol who told him, put your gun down and we'll show you what kind of nigger you really are.
Some people, it seemed, hadn't heard that mm-hmm. last week was the very first time that they understood what you and other black officers went through that day. Has that been your perception too? Do you feel like this has been the time where people have really gotten it and understood it?
Well, I mean, the only thing that changed is the audience got bigger. So I guess when you have more people listening, then sure, more people are going to get in and see what you went through.
I need you guys to address if anyone in power had a role in this.
Also testifying, D.C. officers Michael Fanone and Daniel Hodges, who you've heard from before on this podcast, and this is Capitol Police Sergeant Aquilino Gonnell.
I, too, was being crushed by the rioters. I could feel myself losing oxygen and recall thinking to myself, this is how I'm going to die, defending this entrance.
We saw officers and lawmakers holding back tears as we heard this graphic testimony, these details about what the officers went through. Here's another moment that stood out. This reaction from Congressman Adam Kinzinger, one of just two Republicans on the House Select Committee.
I never expected the day to be quite as emotional for me as it has been. I've talked to a number of you and gotten to know you. I think it's important to tell you right now, though. You guys may, like, individually feel a little broken. You guys all talk about the effects you have to deal with, and, you know, you talk about the impact of that day. But you guys won. You guys held.
Was that what you expected it to be?
I didn't have any expectations of what it was going to be.
I met up with John in a park in Montgomery County outside of D.C. almost a week after the hearing.
I had no expectations of, I didn't know anything. I tempered my expectations because I figured that it would have made me nervous if I started expecting this. So I just was like, you know what? The night before, I didn't even read my testimony. I just had a good dinner and I just went to sleep, you know, so.
What did it feel like during that hearing?
I feel like I had the weight of like an entire department, nation, all on my shoulders. But I had a strong group of three other men next to me that helped me carry that. So it was a lot of pressure, but it needed to be done, and I'm grateful that I did it.
You've gotten close with Officer Fanone.
Yeah.
Have you really just developed a friendship based on the shared experience and obviously being open and going out there and telling your story?
Mike and I, we couldn't be more different, like as far as like appearances and political views and the type of music we like. We couldn't be more different. But we're both men of integrity and men that care about doing right. And in this day and age, it's tough to find. So I feel like that's one reason why we unite the way we do. Because I know I'll go to a battle with that guy any day, you know? And so many people from my department, like my coworkers, so many people that I would do January 6th all over with again, because those group of guys are just heroic, brave guys.
Dunn tells me that since the hearing, he's gotten more recognition. People stopping him at the Capitol, stopping him even at Costco and saying, hey, you're that guy, people wanting pictures. He says he has gotten a lot of positive support, but the officers have also heard backlash, hate, and in some cases, threats. As the hearing was happening, Officer Fanone says he got the voicemail you're about to hear. He sent this to me unedited, but it is so offensive, we did decide to bleep it. The man repeatedly calls Fanone a homophobic slur and everything under the sun. Fanone tells me this came in as he was testifying, and the FBI is now investigating. Listen.
Yeah, this is from Michael Fanone, Metropolitan Police Officer. You're on trial right now, lying, and you want an Emmy, an Oscar? What are you trying to go for here? You're so full of shit, you little You're a little man. I can slap you up the side of your head with a backhand and knock you out, you little You're a punk. You're a lying. How about all that scummy black scum for 2 years, destroying our cities and burning them and stealing all that stores and everything? How about that, and assaulting cops and killing people? How about that, you That was on the goddamn Capitol. I wish they would have killed all you scumbags, because you people are scum. They stole the election from Trump, and you know that, you scumbag. And you too bad they didn't beat the shit out of you. You're a piece of shit. You're a little you scumbag.
How did you find out about that voicemail that Fanone got during the hearing?
He told me about it, but I didn't. He played it, but I didn't really like hear it. I really like listened to it when he played it on the air. So That's when I actually like listened to it. And I can't say I'm surprised. I'm not surprised. I'm not. I mean, didn't that? Isn't that something that kind of like proved my testimony true? Like, that's literally what we were just testifying about. And you got people saying that it didn't happen. And I've seen things, people saying that he sent that to himself. And like, I don't get it, man. I just don't get it.
Have you gotten any threats to that level?
Not to that level. A bunch of hate mail. Whatever. You know, I it was tough at first, like I said, because we as humans, I feel like we do it to ourselves. We self-sabotage ourselves. You could have 100 people say, hey, you look so nice today. You look amazing. You look great. But if one person comes up to you and says, oh my gosh, you wore that today? Wait, what? All those 100 comments go out. We do that to ourselves.
And then you get so worked up and angry about it.
About one freaking person.
One crazy person might not even live in this country. Might be a computer bot.
But even still, I think it's human nature, and we do that to ourselves. I have a good psychologist I'm working with. I have a great social network of friends, my family. When the news came out about the officer who committed suicide, I had so many people just reach out and just check on me. Hey, you okay? I'm here if you need to talk. And I mean, that's refreshing, you know. So I try to block that noise out. Like I said this before, I say people want to talk about you, but nobody wants to talk to you. Okay. Yeah. I'm available to talk if anybody wants to talk. I'll have those conversations, but they don't want to have them, so.
Dunn has been attacked by right-wing pundits, called a crisis actor. He says hate mail has come via email, Facebook Messenger. He locked his Twitter after the hearing. There are also news articles about far-right groups posting racist comments and images on the messaging platform Telegram, including a noose.
Have you seen that? Are you aware of it?
I'm aware of it. I just haven't seen it, though, but I'm keep pushing on.
Is there anything that you've heard that's been the most difficult to deal with when it comes to the backlash? I mean, as a 13-year officer, right?
Well,
being called an actor.
I guess I take that as a compliment. Was that good? I'm not an actor. I literally wrote my closing statements as the hearing was going on.
I mean, some of it's just so outlandish. It's hard to take it seriously at the same time.
What's so crazy is that, but that's how I felt about talking about January 6th. Like, this is so bizarre what is happening. And what's even more bizarre is that it was people want to say, what happened? Like, press play. And then you see what happened. Like, I don't get, people are weird.
Has it impacted your family? I mean, kind of this new round of fame, but with it coming
infamy.
This infamy as well. Do you think that they've felt that?
They just worry. They worry about me.
Yeah.
I'm a transparent person. If I need something or something's wrong or I'm not okay, I'll say that in some capacity. I'm not like happy. I'm not smiling in a great. I'm okay. I'm all right. I'm working on getting better, though, so that's where I'm all right.
Do you feel like a different person than you were this time last year?
Yeah. Suffer from depression and anxiety, and it's kind of like a shell of my former self, because I was this outgoing, always cracking jokes, life of the party type of person. Now I'm just like, whatever. Because I'm just trying to navigate through these new feelings and how to cope with them. You don't just get over something like this. You don't just get over it. You learn how to live with that, and you control it. And that's what I'm working on, how for me to be in control. So.
I remember last time we spoke, you said it was your therapist that made you realize PTSD was something that impacted you, where you didn't think that before that was brought up to you, that was something at play?
Well, yeah, because, you know, a lot of people even really, I didn't know what really PTSD means. Like, people just think automatically it's just angry, violent flashbacks or something like that. But it's so many more factors that help determine PTSD. And a lot of people don't even... They just call it PTS because they don't look at it as a disorder. Like, it's a natural response to going through something traumatic. And it's not something that should be worn with, like, a badge of shame. Because people that have, I think those are some strong people that they're still pushing through and still able to continue on. So when you have PTS, I don't look at it as a disorder, because you're still going and you're still getting up every day and facing the world, even when so many people are saying what you went through didn't exist. or it wasn't that bad. So I look at PTS as a badge of strength.
Dunn has been open about his mental health struggle. He has repeatedly called for more resources for officers and says talking helps him.
Some people cope with just throwing it in the closet and get, you know, walking or closing the door and that's it. Some people cope differently. I found talking about it helps me out therapeutically. It's helpful to talk about what I've been through, and hopefully that just inspires somebody either to talk or to, even if they don't want to talk, just talk to somebody privately, or, you know, not feel so bad about what happened.
I talked with John the day we learned that two D.C. police officers died by suicide in just the last few weeks. We only knew about one of them when I spoke to John.
I was just stuck. Like, wow, you gotta be kidding me. You never know when anybody commits suicide. You never know what's going on in their head. But I guess it's safe to assume that they're dealing with something so heavy that they think this is the only way out. And I just hope and pray that if anybody is feeling that way, know that your life matters and seek help. Try to get help, please. I can't even imagine what that may have been going on in that person's head or anybody that commits suicide. But just please try to get some help. You know, your life matters. Your life matters. And I don't know. It's sad. It's really sad. Because I believe he was one of the officers who was there on January 6th. And I just pray that wasn't something that contributed to it. You know, it's just so sad.
Already, we know that two officers who responded on January 6th died by suicide soon after. Capitol Police Officer Howard Liebengood took his life 3 days later, and D.C. Officer Jeffrey Smith about a week later. Both of their families have said they believe January 6th played a role. You've probably seen the many headlines more recently saying four officers who responded to the riot died by suicide. But I do have to clarify that families of the two D.C. officers who took their own lives in July, Kyle DeFreitag and Gunther Hashida, their families have not made any connection to January 6th at this point. In fact, when I talked to D.C.'s police chief about Officer Hashida, he said it wouldn't be fair to make that leap. So I do want to be clear about that. But it doesn't change the fact that police and firefighters are more likely to die by suicide than in the line of duty, that this has been and remains a huge issue, and some officers who responded to the insurrection are still dealing with the toll. I recently spoke to the new Capitol Police Chief Tom Manger about how his officers are doing 6 months later.
What's the morale like on the force right now?
You know, morale is always one of those topics where I always say it's in the eye of the beholder. But the cops here went through something very traumatic on January 6th. And I think many of them are still feeling some of the impact from that day. So there's things that we need to do to improve the processes here, improve training, equipment, policy, staffing issues. And if we can do that, I think the officers here will feel better supported.
Capitol Police remains short-staffed. The police union says dozens of officers have left since the riot.
I mean, you're working six, sometimes 7 days a week. Extended hours. I mean, it's no secret we're short-staffed. But people are stepping up to the challenge. Those officers, like I alluded to earlier, it's a great group of guys, and they are dedicated to their jobs. Which, even though we're short, like it gives me hope, inspiration that we're still coming to work, even though all this crap going on, you know.
I've heard from another Capitol Police officer that there are more officers still looking to go, some wanting to leave law enforcement completely.
Is it something that's crossed your mind, leaving Capitol Police or leaving the profession?
I I just want to do something where I can help people, and I feel like I'm doing that now. Who knows what the future holds? I don't know. I like helping people, and wherever I can do that effectively, I'll continue to do it. So,
I know you have a 9-year-old daughter, right? One child?
Yeah, just one. Yeah.
How much of everything does she understand, and what has her reaction been, especially as time's gone by?
Well, kids are really smart. You know, kids are really smart. Especially this day and age, they know how to use the computers and everything. So I'm sure she's able to find out anything that she wants. You know, I tell her, you know, some bad people try to do some bad things to the Capitol. The good guys won. She just brings me such peace and some calmness. You know, it's great being around her. You know, she hugs me a little tighter. I hug her a little tighter. And, you know, it's like my rock kind of thing. You know, it's weird because she's a small human. But she means so much to me, though, so...
What's your hope for the Select Committee?
I just want them to investigate it thoroughly. There have been people on one side saying that Nancy Pelosi was in charge of the security. She did. Okay. Investigate it, find out, and then anyone who had any involvement in the failures of January 6th, I just hope that they're all held accountable. I don't care what side of the political spectrum they're on. If anybody was negligent and responsible for the shortcomings and the failures, I don't want to say well, there were some failures, but I don't like to use that word because we really succeeded in our mission as far as keeping members of Congress safe. But if anybody had anything to do with it, I don't care who it is, they need to be held accountable.
During the congressional hearing, Dunn made an analogy about hiring a hitman, talking about former President Trump without saying his name. This is what he said in the hearing.
If a hitman is hired and he kills somebody, the hitman goes to jail. But not only does the hitman go to jail, but the person who hired them does. There was an attack carried out on January 6th, and a hitman sent them. I want you to get to the bottom of that.
I kind of like botched that analogy, but I figured like people knew what I meant. And if they look at it and say, you know what, he was within his scope, then sure, okay, I can live with that. What I can't live with is them saying it didn't happen or something did or didn't happen without even investigating it. That's all I'm asking for, just fair and open investigation. And if the investigation leads to that, then I have to live with that because that's how democracies work. That's where we're at. So, and I can live with that.
My colleague and photographer, Van Applegate, asked Dunn about what he thought about his place in history.
Have you thought yet? I mean, you're doing the day-to-day right now, I can tell. But have you thought about what history is going to say about this and where your place in this is?
You know, everybody always says history is going to remember history. What will be, history won't be kind to people. I mean, it's kind of cool to think that you're on the right side of history, but not at the expense of all the crap that we're going through, you know? Sure, I mean, it's, history be kind. You're on the right side of history, guys. They're going to be nice. That's good, but I'd rather not be on in the history books and have people, this not ever happened, you know? I mean, I'm glad that I am doing the right thing, and I'm glad that so many other people have the courage to do the right thing. I just rather it not even happen at all, you know?
But it did. And Dunn says he won't stop talking about it, despite the minority of people out there who would prefer we forget.
To put it frankly, I have no clue what the heck I'm doing. I have no clue what I'm doing, but I am following my conscience and following my heart, and I'm okay with wherever that leads me. I'm okay wherever that takes me. I can live with that because I believe what I'm doing is right.
Because this episode deals with suicide, we want to include the number for the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 800-273-8255. People are available to help around the clock.
We know Georgia politics. From Peachtree Street to Pennsylvania Avenue, Politically Georgia Podcast delivers exclusive news and analysis 5 days a week by a team of veteran political insiders watching your public officials. Hosted by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Greg Bluestein, Bill Nigut, Tia Mitchell, and Patricia Murphy. Listen weekdays at 10 a.m. on WABE 90.1. Stream everywhere or at ajc.com/podcasts. News and analysis 5 days a week from Politically Georgia Podcast.